is Matt Connickson. I'm a sales agronomist with CHX Ag Services in Oakley, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHX Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick with Jamie Dickerman. We'll have a report from Tyler Donaldson as well. Today continues that warm trend. Morning lows around 50, afternoon highs reaching the upper 60s to low 70s. Tomorrow will be slightly cooler, highs back in the 60s. This weekend, a low-pressure system from Canada will bring scattered rain. Showers are expected late Saturday into Sunday evening, with up to a half of an inch of rain possible east of the Red River. Skies will be mostly cloudy, with lows in the upper 40s to low 50s, highs in the 70s in some areas. Next week, cooler air moves in behind weekend rain. Morning lows will dip to the low 40s, afternoon highs around 60. Skies will be partly cloudy and a few showers possible midweek.
Today's USDA supply-demand report has been canceled due to the government shutdown. Without that data, traders are looking at other factors such as basis values. P&W basis values levels have increased, suggesting buying interest from countries other than China or soybean yields are lower than expected. The corn basis has stayed relatively flat.
This is day number 9 of the government shutdown. The Senate failed in its attempt to pass a continuing resolution yesterday, which would fund the government on a temporary basis. The vote, 54 to 45, 60 votes are necessary for passage. Meanwhile, Speaker Mike Johnson does not plan to call the House back into session until the upper chamber passes the Republican plan to reopen the government.
As that shutdown continues, House Ag Committee Ranking Member Representative Angie Craig says Congress needs to return to work and find common ground to reopen the government.
Well, I can tell you on the House side, my Republican colleagues aren't even in Washington, D.C. right now. They're not even in town. What we're hearing, you know, I'm the head of the Ag Committee for House Democrats, and, you know, I just had a call with my committee to talk about the implications if the government doesn't get back open soon, to talk about, you know, the fact that the harvest is here and farmers are hurting and they need help. You know, we're here ready to work. So, you know, I don't know where my Republican colleagues are, but they're certainly not in Washington on the House side right now.
Craig says farmers need consistent policy and real solutions, not short-term aid. She criticized the administration's approach to farm assistance, saying it fails to address long-term challenges.
I just think it's a damn shame that the administration has sent $20 billion to Argentina to bail them out. From a reconciliation bill perspective, you know, the money that got put into that bill is not going to be seen until October of next year. So, look, the administration wants to do this without congressional authority, but that is a drop in the bucket of what family farmers need to stay afloat, just given the tariff situation. And frankly, we're going to be in the same position next year that we are right now if the Trump administration doesn't actually change its policies.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says any new farm aid should be crafted by Congress, and he wants lawmakers to use the opportunity to address deeper issues in the farm economy. Grassley says high input costs and weak demand continue to challenge farmers this fall.
That level of funding, this gives Congress the opportunity to address the root causes of crisis in the farm country, namely high input costs and the need for greater demand for corn and soybeans. Any payment program for farmers from the Congress should include legislation allowing for the sale of year-round nationwide E15. This would generate $25 billion in new economic activity, and roughly $10 billion of that is directly from increased corn demand.
Grassley says the details of the proposed aid package are still unclear, and any final figure will likely require congressional approval.
All we hear is from the administration on $10 to $14 billion, so the final figure hasn't even been agreed upon. And then there's only $4 billion in the CCC, so I had a discussion with cabinet people on this Monday on the phone on how you make up $10 to $14 billion if there's only $4 billion in the CCC, and they said there'd have to be two tranches of it, some of it coming from money available right now, and then the fund would have to be supplemented by the Congress of the United States in appropriation bills.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. A reminder, for more information from the Red River Farm Network, you can visit Facebook, X. You can also find stories and more on the Red River Farm Network website, rrfn.com. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. In a post on X, White House spokesperson Caroline Leavitt said the Trump administration was using tariff revenue to fund the SNAP program for women, infants, and children during the government shutdown. Section 32 resources will reportedly be used. However, the Section 32 account is used to encourage ag exports, government purchases of surplus commodities, and direct payments to farmers. Tariff revenue has also been cited as a way to fund a farm assistance package. Congressional approval may be needed for either option.
China's refusal to buy U.S. soybeans has left a gaping hole in the export market that experts like NDSU Extension economist Frayn Olson says can be filled by other export markets, but it won't be easy.
You know, there are other markets that the U.S. can tap into, but they're much, much smaller, and the supply chains are a little bit different. It's, you know, they don't need the larger volumes. They don't need as many shipments on as regular a basis, or, you know, as a regular rhythm. And a lot of the countries that do have pretty large soybean imports and have some crushing capacity are already buying from the U.S. There are some that we could potentially grow some market space into. But the moral of the story is that the choices and the countries that we could potentially sell to offset sales to China are pretty small, and there needs to be a wide variety of them.
There is no quick fix to the problem.
Unlike corn or unlike wheat, there isn't a really quick alternative market that we can jump to say, well, if we don't sell to China, we'll just sell into these markets and we'll be fine. And there just isn't anything like that. If we look longer term, I think there's some growth markets we could be looking and tapping into. But there's nothing as a quick fix, and that's part of the challenge we're facing. And that's one of the reasons that the supply chain, the elevators and the local crushers and all the export terminals are saying, well, what do we do with these soybeans?
With a large soybean crop incoming, storage at a premium, and China still withholding from the market, many farmers bracing for an uncertain winter while trying to find a home for their crop. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson reports.
CoBank grains and oilseed economist Tanner Emke says the U.S. is facing a 1.4 billion bushel shortage of upright grain storage this year, with soybeans especially feeling the effects of the tighter infrastructure.
Obviously, there's a lack of sales to China, and that is a problem, especially for farmers that ship soybeans to the Pacific Northwest. And so that's going to be an issue going forward at a time when storage is going to be very tight. We've got a record corn crop, and that's going to be competing for storage with soybeans and wheat. We're coming off of the fifth biggest wheat harvest, or excuse me, the largest wheat harvest in about 5 years. And so it depends upon what part of the country you're in and what those dynamics look like and how things are going to be playing out. But there's obviously going to be some hard decisions that farmers are going to have to make, especially when it comes to soybeans.
Storing soybeans comes with its own challenges.
Sell them to the elevator. Are they going to hold on to those soybeans and hope for a trade deal with China and prices coming back? Are they going to store those soybeans on the farm? And if so, do they know how to store those soybeans on the farm? Do they have any experience with that? Because this is a different kind of year than what we've normally experienced.
And he says that it's ultimately up to each farmer to figure out the best course of action.
It's going to depend upon what a farmer's experience is with storing soybeans and what kind of marketing programs the elevator is going to offer when managing this commodity, when you're lacking a strong export market, but you've got plenty of commodity that needs storage.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
Results from a crop disease survey funded by the North Dakota Corn Council and North Dakota Department of Agriculture are out. Late season foliar disease pressure this fall was the highest in over a decade. The NDSU Crop and Pest Report places the blame on the extended warm fall with enough rain or dew to develop disease. However, the report says these foliar diseases likely did not result in significant yield loss.
According to the latest NDSU Crop and Pest Report, corn rootworm populations dropped rapidly this fall as monitoring wrapped up across southeast North Dakota. The final week of trapping from September 25th to October 1st, capturing just 111 beetles, down sharply from the previous week's 831. Only the Cass County site near Argusville exceeded the economic threshold of 14 beetles per trap, signaling the potential risk for next year's crop.
Gold prices reached levels never seen before, topping $4,000 per ounce in the Wednesday trade. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture here on the Red River Farm Network. It is National 4-H Week. Polk County, Minnesota Federation President Sydney Erickson grew up with parents in 4-H, making it an easy decision to join herself.
My parents actually were in 4-H growing up, and so that's kind of how I got started in 4-H. And it's just always been in my family. So that's really what got me into 4-H. And I would say the most important thing to me in 4-H is probably showing livestock, because I've grown up with especially like beef cattle all my life, and then as I got a little older, and I started our own sheep flock. So growing up, since I was in like kindergarten, I have been showing livestock, especially beef cattle and sheep. And then every few years I would show pigs, and then I took a break from it, and now I'm showing pigs again.
Erickson, who grew up in Fertile, Minnesota, says the 4-H has helped shape her into the person she is today.
4-H has been like probably the biggest impact in my life. I would say if there's anything that's impacted me, it's been 4-H. I've been in it since I've been in kindergarten, so like 13 years, and it's really just shaped me to be the person I am. I'm a very outgoing person. And even if I wasn't in 4-H, I think I'd still thrive, but it just made me a better person as a whole. I've been able to make so many connections. Last year, I was a state agriculture ambassador for Minnesota, and I got to do a lot of things throughout the state and meet new people. And so it definitely helped me grow as a person to make connections and help me thrive for my future.
Red River Farm Network's coverage of National 4-H Week brought to you by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Associated Milk Producers Incorporated, and Minnesota Farm Bureau.
Activist groups, including the Humane Society of the United States and the Sierra Club, are back in court appealing a federal court decision impacting animal agriculture. These groups are challenging an EPA rule exempting farms from air pollution reporting related to animal waste. In August, the court said the rules were unnecessary and an overreach. The activist groups are giving it another shot by appealing that federal court decision. We have some green on the screen this morning. Minneapolis wheat 3.25 higher for December at 558.75. Chicago wheat December 4.25 higher. Hard red winter wheat, same contract, 3.75 higher. A fraction gain for December corn, 0.5 cent higher at 422.5. Soybeans November 1024.5. That market goes down by a nickel. March down by 4.5 cents. Checking in on the farm calendar, the National FFA Convention is coming up October 29th through the 1st of November. It'll be held in Indianapolis, the Blue Wave coming to Indy. And, of course, the Red River Farm Network will provide broadcast coverage from that event. Have yourself a great Thursday. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.